With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today is Thursday, October 12th. Coming up in today's show, the quota implementation plan will be explained at upcoming meetings, and we'll explain more in just a moment. But first, we continue to watch the agricultural side of the devastating and fatal fires in Napa and Sonoma County. The California Association of Wine Grape Growers issued a statement on the fires, saying the association is saddened by the loss of lives, structures, and property due to the wildfires in Napa and Sonoma, as well as Mendocino counties. The CAWG shares their deepest sympathies with the thousands of people who have been and will be affected by this tragedy. They say they are grateful to the firefighters, first responders, and community members who are helping to protect lives and property. CAWG President John Aguirre said, "In the coming days, we will have a clearer picture of the extent of the damage that has occurred to vineyards and wineries and the response needed to aid recovery. Until then, our thoughts and prayers go to all those impacted by this unfolding disaster and to the men and women who are bravely battling these fires." CAWG will work with members of the California Congressional Delegation, key federal officials, and other wine industry organizations to ensure adequate resources are provided for disaster response and recovery efforts. Meanwhile, officials say firefighting efforts in Northern California include every group from local fire departments up to the U.S. Forest Service. Gary Crawford has that part of the story.
In California's fire-ravaged Santa Rosa County.
One thing I think that's it's really important to reiterate is the great job that our first responders have been doing. All the different fire agencies that are coming forward to help.
California State Senator Bill Dodd. And meanwhile, in Washington Tuesday morning, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, whose department has the U.S. Forest Service, told reporters that those wildfires that have killed so many people and destroyed so many structures in Northern California are not on Forest Service lands.
But when it comes to fighting forest fires, that doesn't matter. Our teams engage with CAL FIRE just as they should be, just as CAL FIRE had been engaged with us in U.S. Forest Service land and BLM land. So we're doing everything we can. Obviously, we know that lives have been lost and structures destroyed.
And California's governor has asked for a federal disaster declaration. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And will high winds return to fuel more wildfires in California, like those fires currently in both the northern and southern parts of the state? Rod Bain continues our team coverage.
October is the usual start of California's wildfire season. And as USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes, the main location of this past weekend's wildfire outbreak is not that uncommon.
Oftentimes it's Southern California, but it is not highly unusual to see big outbreaks of wildfires also in Northern California.
With, in this case, a rush of high wind Sunday night fueling wildfire outbreaks in parts of California wine country in the north that resulted in multiple fatalities and over 1,500 buildings destroyed. And while the threat of high winds and fire weather subsided in the region Tuesday, Rippey said a Pacific cold front arriving Wednesday could change that.
We expect another blast of winds, and so in areas where the fires may appear to have calmed down, this could spark some of these fires to reignite or re-spread. So we are certainly not out of danger yet across Northern California.
Meanwhile, firefighters Tuesday continue battling an over 7,000-acre wildfire in Southern California near Anaheim. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
In other agriculture news today, the House Agriculture Committee is drafting the next farm bill and could bring the bill for consideration by the full House of Representatives yet this year. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway commented on the time frame of getting the 2018 farm bill through the House and Senate. Conaway says the committee and staff are putting pencil to paper now on drafting the next farm bill, including the nutrition title.
We'll have that done, we think, over the next several weeks. And in my conversation with the leader, if I can show him a path forward to 218 votes, then he'll put us on the floor sometime in November, December, January kind of time frame.
He says the Senate is considering a similar time frame.
I know Pat Roberts is talking about doing a very similar time frame, but I think we're further along. But as soon as we can show where we've got the votes, then I think the leader will put us on the floor, and then we'll back up from that by several days to run it through committee and then move forward.
The House Agriculture Committee held a Farm Bill listening session in New York. The event was one of many across the U.S. to gain input from farmers and ranchers on the next Farm Bill. Conaway also visited Canada over the weekend to talk about agriculture in the North American Free Trade Agreement, and to urge Canada to take negotiations seriously while working quickly to finish the effort. Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. The Almond Board will be at the upcoming CAPCA convention. Program Coordinator, Industry Relations, Rebecca Bailey, tells us more.
So the California Association of Pest Control Advisors, also known as CAPCA, is hosting their 43rd annual conference. It starts this weekend, October 15th, and will run through Tuesday, October 17th. This year's conference will be in Reno, and it's truly a conference dedicated primarily for PCAs throughout California. The CAPCA conference is really the major continuing education meeting for CAPCA and the state's PCAs. And last year, there were a total of around 1,600 attendees. So it's a good-sized conference for this purpose. There's many educational sessions that are offered through this conference that provide an opportunity for PCAs who need their continuing education units or CEUs. And in addition to these informative content sessions, there's a large trade show for attendees to stroll through and chat with different groups and organizations and companies. And it's on the trade show floor where you can find myself along with my colleagues, Jenny Nicolau and Spencer Cooper. We will have some of our traditional Almond Board resources that are beneficial to this demographic and conference attendee, including our honeybee best management practices. We will also have a sneak peek of this year's full Almond Conference program and resources you can pick up and share with your friends about our upcoming Almond Conference that's quickly approaching this December 5th through 7th in Sacramento. So if you're attending the CAPCA conference, I strongly encourage you to stop by our booth, number 718, and say hello. We're looking forward to a great show, and we hope to see you all in Reno.
That's Almond Board Program Coordinator, Industry Relations, Rebecca Bailey. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take "with you" from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
This is Farm City Newsday. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
A series of meetings for dairy producers will be held throughout California in the coming weeks, offering information on the Quota Implementation Plan, or QIP. The sessions will go over the statewide QIP referendum and will also provide a description of the program. The informational presentations will be concise to provide sufficient time for questions from those in the dairy industry. On October 16th, a session will be held at the Stanislaus County Farm Bureau in Modesto at 10 a.m. The November 6th meeting will be held at the Chino Fairgrounds beginning at 10:30 a.m. And the final session will be held on November 7th in the conference dining room of the Heritage Complex in Tulare at 10 a.m. The QIP paperwork has been delivered to the post office and should be on its way to producers. The blue ballot is accompanied by instructions and a postage-paid envelope to return the ballot that must be filled out and postmarked no later than Monday, December 4th, to be counted in the vote. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Corn maturity continues apace, while corn conditions inch upward. Stephanie Ho has an update.
What's the weather been like in the Midwest for corn growers?
The major developments there are that we have seen some rain move into the dry areas. And as of early today, October 10th, we saw our first significant freeze across the upper Midwest.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
So for corn maturity, now reaching 82% nationally by October 8th, 5 points behind the five-year average of 87%, 10 percentage points behind last year at this time.
And he again points to the freeze, which affected corn growing areas in the Dakotas, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Colorado.
Was that corn mature enough to withstand the freeze? And the answer is, in most cases, yes.
He says corn maturity has been delayed this year, which means an even more nerve-wracking race against the clock. The rate of corn harvest is slower than last year, while corn condition continues to inch upwards at the end of the season. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. beef industry, of which, of course, dairy cows comprise a significant portion, continues to improve the quality of its management practices. That's according to the 2016 National Beef Quality Audit, or NBQA, that was commissioned by the Beef Quality Assurance Program. In a release, Jim Mulhern, president and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation, said as dairy cows continue to grow as an integral part of the U.S. beef supply, these results demonstrate that producers are dedicated not only to producing a safe, wholesome, high-quality milk product, but also to showing the same dedication to the meat produced by the dairy sector. He said the farm program's partnership with BQA has produced valuable resources to help nurture the environment of continuous improvement for beef and dairy cattle. Now, any dairy farm participating in Farm Animal Care version 3.0 will receive BQA certification equivalency. The two programs work collaboratively through their partnership to provide a collection of resources for producers. For 25 years, the Beef Checkoff-funded National Beef Quality Audit has delivered a set of guidelines and measurements to help cattle producers determine quality confirmation of the U.S. beef supply. And today, dairy cows represent 20% of the U.S. beef supply. That's a sharp increase from 5.5% back in 2011. The NBQA results through the years have helped improve the cattle and beef production and now also capture insights on beef quality and information related to food safety, sustainability, animal well-being, and consumer preferences. One improvement the audit revealed is that the industry can more effectively communicate beef's benefits to consumers. According to Josh White, Executive Director of Producer Education for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the research did prove the cattle industry has a great story to tell, but also suggests we aren't getting that story to as many people as we should. He said utilizing the beef quality assurance and farm programs and the shared principles more uniformly throughout the beef and dairy industries can not only enhance industry commitment to better beef, but would also help increase consumer confidence and encourage greater beef demand. According to the 2016 results, the cattle industry continues to make progress in reducing defects that negatively impact beef quality. For example, lameness in cull cattle has improved significantly. Today, 76% of cull cattle are identified as sound. Body condition scores of cull cattle have also improved. Only 9.3% of cattle were identified as too thin. That compares to 22% back in 2007. And Mexico and Canada may have little to ask for when it comes to ag trade barriers with the U.S., but they could seek further dairy access. Former chief ag trade negotiator Darcy Vedder told Politico that since both Mexico and Canada have long wanted U.S. Food and Drug Administration recognition to sell grade A dairy products like fresh yogurt and fresh cheeses in the U.S., there could be pressure to allow those products in. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Well, we're moving into the harvest season now, and it's the usual situation. We'll have some crops that will be bigger, some that will be smaller than last year. Actually, it's that way every year. Mine is not the full crop survey, but it's the best I can get. The corn crop will be smaller than last year, so will the soybean crop. Corn may be down as much as 10%. Soybean decline will likely be about 2%. Cotton, well, questionable, but, well, right now, don't expect any significant changes. The Southeast peanut crop should be slightly bigger than last year, but crop watchers won't commit themselves right now. Otherwise, don't look for any changes that would impact the markets and the prices farmers receive. Altogether, 2017 has been a rather uneventful year. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
Katie Roth and her husband TJ farm with their partners John and Luann Shea in the southwest corner of America's Dairyland in Wisconsin, where they milk Holsteins and grow all of their feedstuff on the farm, including corn, soybeans, alfalfa, and wheat. In addition, she serves as one of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance Faces of Farming and Ranching. Jamie Johansson caught up with her at the World Dairy Expo. Here's the interview.
Katie, take me through you, yourself, your farm here, and we're here in Madison, Wisconsin, and this is basically home for you.
This is very close to our farm. I grew up, it's actually kind of funny because agriculture was something that I never really knew that I loved until we had a barn fire when I was younger, and today I'm proud to say that I'm still in agriculture. We have a dairy farm about an hour and a half southwest here in Madison. We're milking about 390 cows right now, and currently this year I serve as a I'm one of the faces of farming and ranching, and it's been a great experience because I get to go and travel, and my whole goal is animal welfare is what I'm really interested in, so I help get to talk to consumers about that.
Well, let's dive deeper into your home operation, and you said you're milking 390 head of dairy cows. Take me through the breed, take me through your barn, your parlor, the ins and outs.
Yeah, the stats. Yep. So we milk those 390 cows three times a day. We have a double 12 parallel parlor, and actually currently we're milking some of our neighbors' cows because they're in the process of expanding, and they needed some room, and we put up a new freestall barn. In the future, we do plan on expanding, and so we have that capability to help them out. And on the farm, my job is animal health, and I am the animal health specialist, and I love being the cow caretaker. That's kind of what I call myself, and really, I love incorporating technology and just learning new things to use on our farm for the betterment of our cattle.
Well, you're leading us into the next segue and conversation, and that's technology. Today, we have smartphones, smart cars, smart homes. We have smart farms and incorporating technology, and in your case, in cow comfort, cow health, mm-hmm. is paramount. So take me through how you have utilized technology on your farm.
So technology is always changing. It's been great through the years. I've been in agriculture. I did the math. I've been in dairy for about 23, 24 years now. And one of the things that I love to use on our farm is our tablet. We have a tablet we sync it to our computer, and it gives me all of the cow information. So anything that I could ever want to know about her birth date, her past health history events, things like that, are all on that tablet. And I use it on a daily basis. Something also neat that I think that we're using is we started using genomics. So we're able to take genetic samples of our animals, and what we are hoping to do is really to select for those health traits that's really important to us, and in the future as well, to have more polled cattle.
Take me through, you talked about expanding the farm, and one of the things that is important when it comes to the viability of the farm and the longevity of the farm is keeping up with the times. And sometimes that's growing, sometimes that's remembering our environment and sustainability. So what are you doing to ensure that there's a farm for future generations?
Sure. I had a great conversation with my husband about this last night. I take care of the cows. It's my baby. He does a lot of the field work and the management on the farm. And we actually just got done planting our cover crops. So this year we planted wheat, rye, and for the first time we tried tillage radishes. And so I kind of had to pick his brain about that. And he told me that we only planted 10 acres to try it. And for us, it's about leaving the soil better than what we found it. And that's so important to us. And so with these tillage radishes, the plan is then we planted them this fall, and then they help to keep the nitrogen in the soil and really break up that soil compaction. And this spring then, when it dies off, and we'll plant our corn or our alfalfa or whatever he decides to plant.
So let's talk about, I understand that you have an off-the-farm job, so your life on the farm is just a small segment of what you do daily.
Yep. I also work, so in the morning, people are like, Katie, you're busy, but I guess I'm just used to it. So in the morning, I take care of our cows.
What time do you start in the morning?
We milk, so I usually get up 4:30, quarter to 5, and then for a couple hours, I'll be at the farm taking care of our cows, and then I also work at the Farm Service Agency in the loan department as well, and we help farmers get loans, and, you know, for me, I could work at home at the farm full-time if I choose to do so, and in the future, that might be an option, but for me, I love learning. And farming, you're always learning. And I wanted to learn to be able to take things as well back to the farm, too.
Let's talk about your experience as one of the faces of farming and ranching. Your face, literally, is what USFRA is sharing globally about our farmers and our ranchers and the story you have. So take me through some of the experiences you've been able to have.
Sure. So we started off, it's been about a year. In November, we were in St. Louis where they kicked everything off and they announced us. And shortly after that, I remember it was January, I had to do 20 interviews in like a two and a half hour segment. And these were interviews that they had set up ahead of time from across the country. So, you know, one minute I might be talking to somebody in Los Angeles, the next minute we're on the East Coast. And what the topic was about was the veterinary feed directive. So I worked with a veterinarian, Dr. Liz Wagstrom, and I'd never even met her before, but it was an awesome experience because we had tag teamed. I gave that experience of what it was like being on the farm and practices that we're doing, and she talked about it from a veterinarian standpoint, and it was great, fun, a lot of fun.
Well, part of faces of farming and ranching is the consumer and communicating your story, what you do daily involved in agriculture, specifically the dairy industry, to the consumer. What is your message to the everyday consumer here in the United States?
My message, this is a good question. Farmers care. I care, and I love what I do, and farmers love what they do, and our motto on our farm is we take care of our cows, and they take care of us, and I want people to know that every decision that we make has their interests and their well-being in mind, and sometimes I don't think that gets shared enough, and we joke about our farm, like our cows have stories and personalities, and sometimes I think that gets missed, and that's what I love in working with animals.
And what are some of the conversations you've maybe been able to have with consumers, not just in the last year representing USFRA, but over the time? Sometimes it might be in the office, you know, in the Farm Service Agency. Maybe it's someone in the supermarket. But what do they ask you? What conversations have stuck with you?
One example I can remember vividly was about 2 years ago, and I was in my hometown of Platteville. We're a very rural community, a lot of agriculture, and we were at a truck pull or a tractor pull that night, and somebody I'd never even met before, I just ended up talking to her, was telling me about hormones and how we have all these hormones in our foods, and it's how it's terrible, and like, what is going on? And I said, I remember being shocked, because you can never take for granted that people understand things. And I said to her, you know, hormones are a part of naturally living things. They occur naturally. And, you know, we had a good conversation about foods that hormones are found in, like estrogen. There's estrogen in spinach. And she looked at me and she's like, there is? I'm like, yes. Like, it's just those things that you don't hear about, but are true.
So you talked about that you get to take care of the animals on the farm. So animal welfare animal welfare has kind of been your platform that you stand on. So what type of things do you instill on your farm to ensure animal welfare and ways that you can communicate that to the consumer?
Sure. So on our farm specifically, a few things we do is I manage our cows that have just calves. This is a pen about 30 cows. And I'll go through and I take their temperatures on a daily basis. I do some blood checks, just like how people check diabetes. I'm checking for ketosis and metabolic disease. And for us, a lot of it's about prevention. And we believe if you can prevention as much as you can, then really in the future that it's helping to prevent that disease and illness. And that's our whole goal. And we have a Facebook page. So we're always putting stuff out there. And this last year, we did a Farm City Day. We'd never done that before. It was very overwhelming. We had about 200 area 4th and 5th graders come out to the farm. It was kind of chaotic, but it was awesome. And I remember one student told me he wanted to join 4-H and work with cattle because he had been to our farm. He thought it was so awesome.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you, and of course this is audio, so no one gets to see your face, but you've had a smile on your face the entire time because you truly are passionate about what you do, and instilling that into future generations is completely what it's all about. Katie, as we wrap up our latest Smart Farmer podcast, any other final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Final thoughts. You know, I'm a dairy farmer. I got to push the milk, drink milk. Yeah. I'm a faithful drink milker and butter. I love butter. If a recipe calls for margarine, I just ignore that and use butter.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
This is Farm City News Day. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation anytime you want, all on our website, agnetwest.com.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air. Your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills. Our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination. Our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today,
4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West, wrapping up your agriculture news for today with more from the World Dairy Expo. With many dynamics currently influencing the dairy industry, a leader within the industry says it's important to evaluate the influences and stay positive. Professional Dairy Producers of Wisconsin Executive Director Shelley Meyer says this is a time of many issues and change for the dairy industry.
These are either very dynamic times or they can be viewed as very difficult times, but they're a time of change. And certainly as dairy farmers, they have an opportunity to look at what they can change, what they can lead on, and what they can control. And there's a big list of the things that we can still control even in these dynamic times.
She says focusing on things you can control starts with the farmer.
The first thing is our own attitude. Every day you wake up and you can look at it that everything is going wrong. It's either raining too much or it's too dry. Or you can look at it as this is the weather that we have and we're going to make the best of it. And the other thing that I think that we can really control are things like how we approach our family, how we take care of our neighbors. And the one thing we don't want to see people do when there's a lot of change is to start to become very isolated.
Organizations like the Professional Dairy Producers of Wisconsin are offering programs to help.
There will be 84 days of educational opportunity for dairy farmers just through Professional Dairy Producers this next year. Everything from calf care to communications programming, financial literacy. There's a whole host of opportunity out there. So feed and nutrition for your dairy cows, youth programming for the next generation, transitioning a business, transitioning your cows, everything from agronomy to communications and leadership. It's all out there. So focus on those things and continue to look for ways that you can get better.
Meyer made those comments as the dairy industry met in Madison, Wisconsin for the World Dairy Expo. For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.